and welcome to episode 197 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars. Dan Butcher, my lovely co-host, can't be here at the moment, but you will hear his voice later.
He'll be back in a minute.
He is, of course, the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, which you definitely need to check out. Yeah. And I'm joined by a man who, no, he's not a dairy product gone bad, but he is, Tony Esmond.
We've just done almost 2 hours of interview, haven't we?
Yeah.
That is just fucking, like we've just been saying, absolute gold. Wait till you hear it.
Yeah.
Fucking brilliant.
We know you lovely, awesome pod listeners out there. You love it when we just have a good conversation with a creator, and it can deviate, it can go wherever. You get comic gold, you get good information, you get everything in this one from the mighty Evan Dorkin. Who I want to say straight up, first off, this came about from a tweet that I put out.
It's like a bucket list tweet of yours,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it was like a couple of months ago. I said, oh, you know, because I do this podcast, I'd love to talk to this creator, and this creator, you know, because they were the classic, especially from the 90s when I was reading Wizard and stuff, you know, indie creators that were really sort of putting their work out there. And I said, I'd love to talk to these people about their work and what it was like sort of making comics and stuff. And Evan got back to me probably within half an hour and said, get in touch with me.
Yeah.
And that was one of those, what?
No. And you'll hear about it later. But, I mean, I was a big Milk and Cheese fan.
Yeah.
And Deadline magazine. And he talks a bit about that. We talk about everything, to be fair. I don't think there's anything we don't actually talk about in this interview. But I've been, a couple of friends of mine have been telling me to read Eltonville. Bob Fingerman's telling me, and it is the best comic you'll read all year. Got to tell you, get Eltonville, and it's just like the truest comic about comic fans you'll read in a long time.
So we talk about a lot of his comics. I mean, obviously some of you are readers of them anyway. If you're not, you'll definitely probably go check out quite a few of his comics after this. But you know where you can check out a lot of comics as well, Tony?
No.
It's our sponsor, Comic House.
Oh, yeah.
We're pros. No, we're not. But Comic House are, and they're the indie comic marketplace with a difference. Obviously, they've got a website where creators of all kinds can sell, you know, self-publish their books, put them on there, and it's another way of selling your book. There's a huge selection of titles on their database. And also, if you list your book on there and have a digital version, they've got an app which is filled to the gills with amazing indie comic books. It's like Netflix for comics. We always say it every week, but that's because it is. And they've got a great selection at the moment. Tony, have you got a list up at the moment?
I have, yeah. I've got it up.
Go for it.
Vanguard 15.
Yes.
Dorsey.
Yes.
What do we need to say about that? Mandy the Monster Hunter, The Face in the Curtain, Volume 2. Vanitas, The Cthulad, 2014 to present, Volume 1 and Number 2. SCI, Superhuman Crime Investigators, Homecoming, Volume 1, Issue 1. The Guys, that's a great series. That's Issue 6, just gone up. And Heads by our pal Rick Jackson.
Yeah.
All pals of ours, but Heads Issue 1 is on there as well. So go and find it.
Yeah, there's loads of stuff. It's updated every week. And also, Pete from Comic House just wanted to another bit of information.
Ooh.
If you're a creator out there, creator, publisher, and sellers, they can, if they've got a profile on there, they can claim it at comichouse.com. So once that's done, that you can add a profile picture, social media details, and it will actually show up on the app, so readers can actually find out more about the creators. Like as soon as they see the book, they then get links to your social media and stuff.
I need to do that because I'm shit with this sort of thing.
I've got to do it as well. So yeah, expect us to do it probably soon. But if you want to know more about the actual app and Comic House as well, because they've got a 14-day free trial, and it's only like £3 a month, which is amazing value for the amount of comics. Because we're literally every week, folks, we're talking about new comics that are being added. They're not taking any comics away. It's only getting bigger. So value for money is amazing. So go to comichouse.com and find out more. And I think we should pat ourselves on the back because that was actually quite good this week, Tony.
It was all right, wasn't it?
It was all right. Yeah.
I'm a bit exhausted.
Yes. This one's epic this week, folks.
Yeah.
And buckle up, and we're not going to mess around with a long intro talking about our weeks because we just had weeks, didn't we, Tony? We were just doing whatever.
To be fair, I had a pretty good week, but I can't really talk about it yet. So there you go.
No, and I've had a lovely weekend. But that's all you need to know, because right now you want to hear some amazing comic talk with an amazing
and
creator.
And just to quickly say, Dan is thinking of buying a shed, which did improve our day.
Yes, and we've already joked about what will be done in it. But but before that nonsense, check out this amazing conversation with... I mean, we didn't say it on the show, I didn't want to embarrass him, but he's a legendary creator, let's be honest. A true indie legend in every way, shape and form.
Yeah, buckle up.
Yeah, buckle up, because we are about to talk to Evan Dorkin. Okay, it's another exciting week here in ACP Towers. And everyone's already laughing, because I've already said that this intro is going to be terribly cheesy. And but we're joined by a creator whose credits include such titles as Dork, The Eltingville Club, Blackwood, and Beasts of Burden, to name but a few. He's also the man responsible for making dairy products, Agents of Anarchy, in the form of milk and cheese. Yes, it's our huge pleasure, huge pleasure, because we've been talking for about 25 minutes before we even started this, to welcome Evan Dorkin to the show. Hello, sir.
Hello.
You're Evan.
Well, it's you know, we've been talking for a while. Yeah. So I feel like we're already, well acquainted and can borrow money from one another.
I love a fiver.
Yeah. I'm a cartoonist, so I have to borrow from you guys. I don't have a movie deal, and I don't work for DC or Marvel, so I could use a tenner. Thank you.
Oh, but comics, isn't comics where all the money is made these days? Surely. That's what some people would make you believe. But
For some people, sure. No, I mean, it's the best time to be in comics. It just depends on who you are in comics, you know? Mm. But I mean, we've never had a time where everybody basically can have the Bob Kane deal without having to be a Bob Kane, which is a good thing not to be.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's so much creator-owned work out there that... Some of it finally trickles down to the creators. It's just it's a really wide field right now. It's not it's a weird place to be an aging cartoonist, as I put it earlier before. I wasn't kidding. It's a really weird time to be in my shoes, meaning probably a lot of other people's shoes, where you've been around long enough that people feel like you're comfortably set, and you're actually struggling worse than you were when you 30 years ago practically.
I mean, there's a little bit of a luck element as well. So someone from somewhere who doesn't understand comics sort of falls over some of your work sometimes, isn't it? Think some of that?
Everything's, there's always luck. But it's also how much work do you have out there? I mean, so many. When I got into comics, you could go to San Diego Comic-Con, and in 1987 I went for the first time, and this know-nothing schmuck with a very bad comic book, Pirate Corps.
Yeah.
Which got better, but at the time was really bad. But I was a rank amateur, but the industry was small enough that I could go to San Diego and nervously get drunk with people who ended up inviting me to parties where you could meet everyone from Kimiko to Marvel to DC to Fantagraphics was practically at this one party. It was a small convention. And at the time, it was the biggest convention in the country, and it was smaller than like probably Heroes Con is now as far as the Artist Alley went. Most of the people who were in Artist Alley, right, guys like Mike Mignola, people like Jill Thompson, it's interesting. I have a sheet of paper of everyone who was in the Artist Alley, and some of them were publishers like SLG and I think Dark Horse. And it's just, Dark Horse is making movies, and SLG is under, and Kimiko is under, and it's really weird. If you could do a show on just the career arcs of so many of these people that some people then Steve Moncuse had a television show and everyone was jealous of the Fish Police guy,
right?
And then a year later he's practically out of the industry.
Yeah.
And some of us are still going. Some of us are have turtles money now. You know, I mean, who would have ever thought that a parody of a Frank Miller comic with turtles was going to be a billion dollar business.
I
keep thinking, oh, this is the end of the turtles, they can't do any more after this, and then they're doing another animated series and another load of comedy.
Nothing ends. I mean, how many times does the Tick come back? It's never really been a hit.
It's always been,
but if enough people, the way that whoever thought that the movie industry would become the comic book industry, except successful, in that every week you're going, you can go to see. It's almost like New Comic Book Day on Friday.
Yeah.
It's the whole situation, the whole industry. One of the reasons people think that everybody in comics is doing all right from outside is because they see the movies and they just assume this glamour and this money gets flung around. And it only goes to people like Mignola or Frank Miller or the Turtles guys or whatever.
Mark Miller over here, I suppose, would be our equivalent.
He's probably doing better than most people.
The
fact that most of it funnels to him and his creators, which is an amazing thing that just did not happen back in the day.
Yeah.
And it only happened back in the day. It only happened for newspaper cartoonists. If there was a Pogo book or Little Abner play or movie, that money went to the syndicate, but it also went to the creator, to the cartoonist. Syndicate's a great way to. And it used to be that the only people who ever got a good deal in comics were people who fought for it, pretty much underhandedly, like Bob Kane. You know, I mean,
yeah.
He didn't create most of the stuff in Batman,
no.
But he got most of the money and the credit.
He just told people he did. That was the difference. Yeah.
Well, it was put on the comics created by Bob Kane. Very few people ever got that. But you had Jerry Robinson and Bob Finger and Shelley Moldoff and all these other people doing the design work. And then stuff was designed, you know, for Superman was designed in the radio. People who worked on the radio show came up with, I think, Jimmy Olsen and things like that. So tons of people created this stuff, and the creators generally got the shaft.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we see people, whoever's name is presenting, when you've got Stan Lee presents, that's who gets the credit and gets all the cameos and people saying crazy shit like they want Stan Lee on a stamp and a statue. Which is a fucked up sense of priorities, even if you're a Stan Lee fan, in my opinion, but whatever. I mean, he had a really great 7-year run, and he took a lot of lessons of EC Comics letters pages and whatnot, and he made good jokes, and he wrote interesting dialogue. But he's no Jack Kirby, you know? I mean, Jack Kirby's failures are fueling the DC universe as the spine of their fucking universe, the New Gods and all that. Yeah. I mean, Stan Lee, when he's left to his druthers, never created anything on his own. I mean, not knocking him, but I mean, I'm disappointed in the way that we treat some of these people, you know, that we step all over people to get to Stan Lee. And I'm like,
yeah,
I mean, he was only as good as his co-creator.
Yeah. I mean, to switch it a bit, you were, you've gone on record as saying you were a big Marvel guy growing up as well, weren't you? More Marvel than DC, is that right?
I was a Marvel guy. I don't know what. I think that Marvel just struck me as cool, and Marvel made sense, which is a ridiculous thing to say about Ant-Man and Nova and the Skrulls and all this other garbage. Which is, I mean, great garbage. When I say garbage, you know, everything I like is great garbage. Godzilla, horror movies, you know, Mexican wrestling. I mean, you know, I just love this stuff, but I can't take it so seriously that I'm going to fight people over it or threaten them over it. It's just out of control as it's become bigger business, as junk culture has become, as B-movies have become A-movies with the budgets of cities. It's just really insane to see people... it becoming a religion for people, you know?
It's taken over, isn't it?
To the point where you get these creators that are working for Marvel or DC, and they write a storyline, and these books are probably selling, a few thousand? They're not obviously not selling huge numbers. But
Tens, you know. I mean, my stuff sells a few thousand.
Yeah.
You know, and also, it's really hard to gauge because these days the monthlies... or the stapled comics, one editor put it to me, is that they're an advertisement for the collections. The books are really where you start to see a profit.
Okay.
It's the comic show. We could do a whole show on comic shops and how insane the direct market is. And that's not even the shops. That's just the direct market is this giant dinosaur that, for a lot of reasons, I think people are afraid to put it out of its misery.
Yeah. I think as well, when you factor in, we saw some figures recently for the pirated comics as well. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, they you'd be surprised how many are viewed. Was it Jim Dubb put up recently? And it was hundreds of thousands.
It was, insane. Yeah.
That's why when people say comics aren't popular, it's like, well, there's a lot of arguments against that. Because first of all, manga is comics.
Yeah.
Anybody who wants to argue against that is a moron. A comic book is a comic book, you know?
Yeah.
Words and pictures, comic book. Doesn't matter what you call it. Manga, manhwa.
Web comics, yeah.
Web
yeah.
comics are goddamn popular. Manga yeah. is popular. I mean, Nancy is once again popular.
Yeah.
Or you get these people that say, oh, this is a graphic novel. You know, they try to distance it from the comic book media.
It's not even a matter of the graphic novel. It's a matter yeah. of the average crazy schmuck who just wants to make comics their own thing
yeah.
and says things like, you know, I mean, unfortunately, some of the crazy schmucks run stores. So it's like, you know, they don't want actually heard people say that they don't want back in the day, they didn't want Pokemon in their store because they didn't want kids coming in.
Yeah,
and that's okay. That's why the place smells like a dump, you know. And you're gonna die lonely. No one at your funeral, even people you owe money to, won't come to you.
You know? Speaking of which, that was one of your formative years, wasn't it? Some of your formative years working in a comic shop, is it? Was it not?
My if formative, if you mean asshole, yeah. I was a terrible, terrible. Person in the comic shop in a lot of ways. I was very good at selling comics.
Right.
I was very good at hand selling and picking people out by their t-shirts and getting to know what they liked, and then they'd walk away with a comic. But they'd also walk away going, what an asshole. So I got fired a lot. And
any particular examples you can think of there?
I got fired. Well, I hated this kid. I think his name is Buddy, and he was a real pain in the ass, and he had done something really obnoxious. So I was in a bad mood. See, this is a terrible story. This is like, I make fun of retail, but this is why I don't own a shop and why I am everything. I rail against everything that I used to be as far as a comics retailer. I was good at the comics retailing. I was not good at the interpersonal stuff or the team comic store. I was just a messed up 18-year-old, 19-year-old at the time. I put a tire iron in the back of his into his spine, and then I started twisting it into his shirt until it gave him, I guess, a metallic version of the Indian rope burn. And he was screaming a little bit too much for everyone to take from this. So my tire had gone flat, and I was just in a bad mood, and I justified I don't know what you'd call what I did to him, but
listen, we've all been tortured in comic shops as teenagers. Yeah. I've got to tell you. I remember going into a comic shop in Richmond asking for Usagi Yojimbo, and the bloke just fucking laughing at me and walking off. Do you know what I mean?
I understand that. I've had that happen. Had that happen to me too, but you're not supposed to be assaulted by the You're not supposed to have your flesh turned into a vortex in your back.
Was that the point where you thought, maybe I should make comics instead of trying to sell comics, or did that happen a couple of times?
I think that was the point where I just thought, I want to hurt Buddy really badly. I don't think I was already trying. I already knew I wanted to make comics, and back then I had enough. I was had no confidence, but I had enough confidence in thinking that I was, again, going back to what I said earlier about the industry being smaller, there was much less of a gene pool of talent out there. And a lot of untalented people could get their hooks into the industry after the Black and White Turtles explosion.
Right.
I was managing in the shop when I only put a tire iron into it was one of those cross ones also. Yeah. It wasn't one of the ones that they use a lot on Columbo to kill people. I mean, that would have been really hard to jack that around. but I had the cross one. I just want people to get a good
literally
visual.
Nobody knows if you're telling the truth now, Evan. I've got to be honest with you.
I'm sorry?
Literally what? Nobody knows if you're telling the truth. I'm gonna go with probably is.
I'm gonna go with truth.
Oh yeah, I got fired for that one. I also got fired for almost losing my virginity in the store once. Did I get fired?
That's a shame.
Yeah, that is a shame because everybody definitely wants to lose their virginity around copies of Jimmy Olsen and Lois Lane. And you know, Jimbo, you know, that's what you want to be looking at the time that you have that especially special moment. I definitely want to be, you know, looking at badges and pins and dirt on the floor and the smell of sadness. I was trying to dispel the loneliness in the store. It was like a pagan rite. It was like some bullshit, you know, Grant Morrison magic. I was trying to fuck the store into happiness.
You see a UFO while you're doing it or something? Yeah, well, that's something.
Wasn't that Barry Windsor Smith saw a UFO? Well,
oh, did he?
Yeah, he did a comic about that. I don't know. It was Windsor, so it was definitely later after he had become serious or something. When you get that middle name in there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've got to tell you, though, if you lost your virginity in a comic shop, that would surely make you a hero in the area of Eltington, though, wouldn't it? I can see that as a storyline in that book.
Like a lot of things in my career, though, it didn't happen. So we won't talk about that. I don't know why I'm talking about this in the first place. I'm tired.
That's what happens on this show. That's how we get you.
Oh yeah, you got me. You got me. It's almost a good story. You almost got a good story on your. It's just like, you know, like Detective Comics 1000, almost a good story. Someone. I haven't read it. I'm just making a joke. It's just a comic. Yeah. It's a LARF.
Yeah,
isn't it? They call it a LARF.
Satire, yeah. People. Satire.
Live action role playing fuckery.
I want that on a T-shirt.
Do what comics does. Just print it up and don't pay the creator. Yeah. That we're five topics removed from what you asked me, but that's the way, unfortunately, my brain.
That's right, man.
That's what we like on this show. Obviously, you've had a sort of long and storied career. And obviously, that's the way of putting it.
I've had a long career and I've done some stories. Yeah.
What is it about like comics that keeps you coming back though?
I'm mentally ill. like most people my age in comics, I just got the. You know, I used to say that the ink got the cheap newsprint. The ink would transfer to your fingertips and get into your system. And comics fans all became like these David Cronenberg rabid. They came from within types who ink got into your blood.
Yeah.
And it became a natural way of thinking about stories. And it just became the way that I mean, I've always been a fan of movies. I was a huge nerd when it came to anything.
Yeah.
But back in those days, I mean, I'm 53. I don't know how old you guys are, but
not far off you, dude. Yeah. About the same.
Yeah, if you get Steranko jokes, you can't be too young. You can't be. Oh, boy. Steranko. Christ. What a goof.
There is a certain mythology growing up around Steranko. I'm beginning to doubt some of it.
It's called horseshit. Yeah. Yeah. Steranko. I mean, yeah, mythology is a great way of putting it. Holy Christ. I once, my wife and I and Paul Dini found ourselves sitting at a dinner table at Dragon Con with Steranko.
Right.
And now I talk a lot, but Steranko can talk while eating the way that most people can just talk. And it was really interesting to see him shoveling food into his mouth while lying about being Steranko or whatever the fuck it is he does. And then we had John Byrne on the other side of the table, and he was doing his character, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was the worst. It was horrible. I don't even have a good story for that. It was just horrible.
I think we're almost at the point where him and Neil Adams are trying to make up even bigger bullshits just to outdo each other. You know.
There's a Neil Adams has outclassed. Has outclassed Steranko because while Steranko only makes up mythology about himself, Neil Adams makes up mythology about the universe.
He does.
So Adams has made a video of how the universe works and how rocks become planets and suns. And I was lucky enough to have seen this on the Legal Defense Fund cruise.
Right.
Where he debuted this thing, which looked like a 1976 video game, which supposedly cost him like $100,000 or something crazy that's floating out there. And if Neil Adams telling you about the origins of the universe is like Ralph Cramden talking about science. It was just this bizarre. He did this show and it included inner Earth theories, and it was just fucking unbelievable. And Yeah, those are two men that I don't get it. You know, I get the talent. I don't get the. Oh my God, it's exhausting to think. It's like when it's one of those things where some. I don't know. Have you ever found that you've met someone in comics, or you know, it's because this is the area of the world we inhabit that you know you get to meet people in comics, and if one of them dies or something bad happens, everybody's. You know, eulogizing them and whatnot, and you're sitting there just thinking, yeah, this is the son of a bitch who just, you know, I watched do X, Y, and Z, and is one of the most horrible people. And you're just biting your tongue until it's severed in half, and you're like, let it go, you know what I mean? Let it go. What can you say? But Adams is a weird dude. I find him...
He's strangely intense, isn't he? Whenever I've met him, he's sort of... He shakes your hand for a little bit too long. I always find that slightly uncomfortable.
I don't believe he's the same politically or anything. There's a Trumpian aspect to him.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah.
Larger than life, making deals here, ignoring, not listening to anyone, ignoring what anyone says and just moving on to him. Mm-hmm. Starenko's got his own, I mean... let's get off this topic before.
Yeah, okay.
Instead of people like that, what
one publisher still willing to work with me and publishers to love these guys.
Yeah.
So,
what are some of the creators that you have met that you just like you've always got time for and you just think, you know, they say never meet your heroes. Who are some of the ones where you just thought that was really good?
Well, they don't have time for me. That's the problem.
It's off.
Well, gee whiz. Whenever anybody talks about who are like the nicest people in comics, really good to meet, which hilarious because every once a century I get on that list and I'm sitting there going, you know, you clearly only met me in the last few years because you didn't meet me in tire iron mode. when my wife started, when we were dating. First dating Sarah Dyer and I, and she was into conventions. Friends of mine went up to her, she told me later, and said, I don't know what you've done, but he used to be such an asshole. And I'm like, these are my friends. And I'm like, a lot of it, not to explain it away, but I'm constantly apologizing between the comic shop and early conventions and whatnot, because my anxiety, I have very terrible social anxiety. Which people don't believe because I talk so much, you know.
Yeah.
But that's kind of like my lifeline. I'm treading. I'm now looking for my third therapist to deal with these things. But I have screwed up my career in so many ways, not because of my behavior so much as my fear of committing to things. So I've backed away from a lot of work, or I have walked away from jobs. Some of them I wanted to, but at conventions I used to get very obnoxious. I would try to joke around and it would not go well. So I would end up pissing people off, or they would meet me at night when I was really, really drunk because I did not know how to interact with anybody and I was overwhelmed. So I was constantly drinking. And to the point where I'm sure some people believe I'm an alcoholic between my work having so much booze in it at the time. And when they met me, I was like I passed out. And then how did I meet, David, from Viva Vendetta. Why am I blanking on David's name? Why are you blanking on
this? God, because you said blanking it, and I'm flying out.
David Lloyd.
Of course, yeah.
Do me a fiver. So I literally met David Lloyd walking into my... Because this is the other cool thing about conventions back in the days. They'd have lots of room parties because everything would just be open and you'd just come to the room. So my comic shop was there, and Jim Hanley, I worked for Jim Hanley's Universe in Eltingville. And he was like, yeah, we're going to have a party. Come in. So, you know, Chris Warner would walk in and then a bunch of punk rock kids would walk in who would start shit. And Chris Warner picked up a chair to throw at them. So one guy was dressed as Robin and he had a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, which was fucking hilarious. We just basically said, we kicked him out of the room. It was hilarious. But I think I walked into the room at 4 in the morning to my hotel room. And this is in 88, judging by the people that I was with from the store. And somebody said, oh, Evan, this is David Lloyd, because, you know, you would just meet people. So it's like, why is David Lloyd hanging out with us bums? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Why is, you know, and I walk in and I passed out right at his feet. Sitting in a chair, I just stumbled down and boom, hello, which was lovely.
I've got to tell you, I love David Lloyd, but
he's
ever present at the bar. I mean, I was at UCAX, which I understand you were at as well, but he was ever present at the bar there as well, dude. I don't think that would have come of any surprise.
Oh no, it was amazing going to UCAX for the first time, and everyone was drunk all day. It was and like there's a bar in the we were doing a deadline panel, and there's a bar, and one of the questions, this is the first time anybody on a panel, I was asked at a panel, they go, what do you think about the fact that they shut the bar down on Sunday for a while? And I said, oh my God, let me get another beer. And I was like, I was getting drunk on panels with everybody, which was amazing. Because they still don't do that in America.
Yeah.
It's
probably frowned upon, isn't it? But to be fair, the deadline days are famously, I mean, for those that don't know and who are listening and wonder what we're going on about, Milk and Cheese was in deadline, wasn't it? And it was a phenomenal period.
Yeah. I was the token Yank. I know it's silly, but I get annoyed when I see on some article or something that I was only that I was part of the reprints from the later era when the money started getting tough and they were reprinting a lot more stuff. And I think they had Pete Bagg and Jaime Hernandez. But I was in there from like the mid period or early mid period because of getting drunk with people at San Diego. And I think Cy Spencer put me in there. I'm trying to remember now. Dave Elliott was the editor on Deadline. And I had met him and he was trying to get me in, but he had left the editorship. And Cy Spencer took it over. And Cy had seen my comics and he saw a pirate coin. He's like, oh, what is this space pirate shit? And he put me on the bottom of the pile. But I understand that. It was you know, my early comics are very, you know, like anybody's early comics are pretty rough. I mean, very few of us start off brilliant. And I still haven't reached brilliant, but, you know.
I'll talk about that.
You look at Jaime Hernandez and Gilbert Hernandez and this certain David Mazzucchelli, and you just go, wow, that, you know, they switched it on early in life.
Okay.
And then there's people like me who at 25 drew like a 12-year-old, but the industry...
Yeah, but Milk and Cheese was phenomenal, dude.
I was a funny 12-year-old, you know? but the early ones are so horrible drawn. I mean, I couldn't even connect the lines up. It was like... It was like a physical therapist would show this kind of artwork to people and go, look, my 6-year-old is not doing well.
To anyone listening, this is just self-deprecating. Yeah. I was buying it off. We have things called newsagents over here. It's like newsstands for you. I was buying them out of the newsagents. Fucking loving them, dude. And the best thing I like about your stories like that and Eltingville and some stuff in Dork is you write the best angry people ever.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone writes angry people as well as you.
Thank you, I guess.
There's a real.
I got to find that third therapist tomorrow. I remember somebody saying once that they felt that when I could really somehow make people really sound like they're screaming on the page.
Yeah.
My style was very intense, and I think that's why I messed my arm up so much because I would really bear down. But I guess so I forget what happened, but I think I got drunk with Cy. And a bunch of people from England in him and Frank Plowright from UCAC.
Yeah, love Frank.
And I got to meet them and we enjoyed hanging out together. And again, this is probably around 91. So San Diego was still not spread out and taken over by the movie companies and whatnot. You still got to meet everyone. I mean, you'd meet Dan Clowes, you'd meet Frank Miller if you want, you know, you'd meet J.R. Williams, you'd meet people who were selling 1,000 copies, you'd meet people who were selling 200,000 copies. You know, you could either meet them at their table, or you'd meet them at the parties afterwards because everyone, it was a large tent. It wasn't perfect or anything like that. There were like 5 women in the industry. There were almost no black people. You know what I'm saying? It was, I'm so happy that things have changed that way, even though opening up the doors to everybody has hurt my career if I wanted to be, you know, if I wanted, but instead of getting angry about it, I see it as I have to keep up. You know, this is not my industry. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So has that changed the way that you sort of write comics or like create your own work? You know, you've sort of adapted in some way.
No, it's just that, I mean, I grew older and I'm still angry, but you know, you can't do the same angry comic. You know, you can't put out the same album over and over. I mean,
Beast of Burden is a whole different kettle of fish to It's like Eltonville, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? It's very different. You know?
Well, I've always, I mean, the first comics I broke in on were Bill and Ted and Predator. Those are my, that's how I went full time. And that's pretty much been my career in a lot of ways. Genre comics, licensed comics. I mean, I've done kind of everything out there to some degree without meaning to. It's just that I've had a lot of interests and I don't have a need to just do Batman stories. I mean, I had an opportunity to do Batman stories and I kind of kind of wish I did it, because if you do one decent run or one book to anybody, then you kind of will have more followers on Twitter. You will have, I mean, it's not automatic. You could, but I mean, you tend to get a boost. You know what I mean? Yeah. You wrestle in WWE for a year. You can even bomb out, but you will always have that.
Yeah. Well, there's many creators who have worked for the big two and then they do their independent stuff and they make more money from those because they've built up this name at some of these big companies.
Well, it's like the in the genre work, in the front of the of previews career arc, you do some independent work, you get picked up by Marvel or DC, or you know, you do a little bit of work, Boom or Dynamite, Dark Horse, and you end up at Marvel and DC. You do a run that people love, or at least something that got some attention, because I mean the characters will bring people to you. Now the thing is, the more talented you are, the better you can push that run. You know what I'm saying? You don't get into WWE or Marvel just for the hell of it. I mean, you don't automatically get Batman. You don't become Scott Snyder or Tom King. You have to do something that gets you into that position. But once you are in that position, you do get the boon of people, you know, I don't know if you saw the strip I saw where I had, you know, people will buy Batman even if it comes with Anthrax, because they must buy. Batman comes with a kick in the crotch from your retailer. You have to buy it. You know, because I've heard people say these things. Well, the guy I hate is doing Batman, but I love Batman, so I got to buy Batman, which is, you know, is insanity. Yeah. But you're always going to have that group. And then you go to Image, and you know what I'm saying? You've got that seems to be a very successful way of going. I never had that. I worked on goofball books because I was afraid to work on the larger books because of the responsibility I felt. And I was afraid of failure. So I worked on weird stuff. I worked on the animated stuff because, well, I also enjoyed what I worked on.
Yeah.
I would get chided by people at DC for coming up with more stories for the animated stuff that my wife and I worked on the show on Superman and then Batman Beyond. And I liked that because the continuity was simple and stripped down, and it was what I enjoyed about superhero comics. I can't imagine working for a company where I have to ask permission to use characters all the time.
Yeah.
And get involved with politics of which office has the Kingpin and which office has Dr. Doom and which one has Lex Luthor. If you have an idea for a good story, that should be the way things work. I understand why it doesn't, because everything is so bullshit important now. You know, everybody thinks that they're part of Hollywood.
Right.
So you've got these, you go on, you go to, what do they call them? I don't know, these meetings that they have so you can all plot.
Oh, yeah, I know. Summits,
or the retreats.
Everybody's a showrunner now instead of a. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, you know what I mean.
You lift your tone out. I mean, I read your BPRD story again today. I love that. That's a great story.
I enjoyed doing that. Yeah, that was but that's the thing. I grew up. I like horror. I like science fiction. I like the romance subplots in Spider-Man growing up. I watched soap operas with my family as a kid. I mean, everything has – if you're going to do the romantic subplot, you should try to do that the best it can be done. If you're going to – you know, and I would try to do stuff in Hectic Planet, Pirate Corps, that had a romance angle on it. And it's like the boring parts of a comic, if you know what I'm saying, the stuff that isn't fighting, or of a movie – the best movies and comics and stories out there for me are, as I've described them when I spoke to classes and stuff, is that you should put the same attention into the so-called boring stuff, the exposition, the how do we get from one place to the next, how do we learn things, the romantic stuff, the emotional stuff, the stuff that a lot of people skim or they don't have the ability to write because they've only read comics or watched movies.
Okay.
So they are only as good as the last movie that they watched, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Scenes you can tell when you have a writer who doesn't have a lot of experience with like people, because they write things that you feel like come from other movies. They have the same beats, they have the same timing. They're usually, the dialogue is on the nose and simplistic, but should make the, if the boring parts of a movie are exciting and interesting and get people wrapped up, you've really done something well, because you're supposed to have people excited when things are blowing up or being chased or hearing something out of a mirror or whatnot. But if you can actually, I mean, an example of that, it would be something like Raiders of the Lost Ark, I think.
Yeah.
There are bits in between everything. Jaws is like that. Smart Machines, you know what I'm saying? These aren't art films or anything like that. But there isn't a part where you go, Jesus, I could go to the bathroom right now. So if Indiana Jones is talking to Marion, you're engaged with it, just like when he shoots a guy or flies a plane. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely. Yeah, the bits where they're chatting in the bar should be as memorable as when he's like running away from it. Yeah, exactly.
Definitely. I mean, those are also the parts where you get to learn about the character and like the character. And something that's very important to me is that you should like, or at least understand, the characters. They should have different voices, should have different different experiences and objectives and goals.
Yeah.
Different behavior and reactions. When the characters start writing themselves, that's usually when they start coming to life. With Beasts of Burden, or actually with anything I've done, whether you like it or not, the characters in Hectic Planet, the characters in Eltingville, they all, well, Eltingville is a weird thing because that's four sides of the same rotten coin, but they do still have their tics, their speech patterns, their behavior, their attitudes, their levels of despicableness. Jerry becomes a sort of human being by the end of that. There is an arc.
Yeah, there is. And I really like the way you ended that, dude, I have to say. And from what you're saying there, that's a great example, because the bits I remember from Eltingville, I mean, for those who haven't read it, some things end up with shops being destroyed and people being murdered at comic conventions. But the bits that you remember are the interactions between them.
You know? Well, it's not a plot heavy. The examples that I tried, like Milk and Cheese is obviously just Grand Guignol bullshit, crazy cartoon theater. It's just search and destroy. It was punk rock. It was wrestling. It was hip hop. You know, the way that they always kind of like ran promos and talked about themselves and ran people down and looked at the camera and were gesturing with their hands and everything. That was a lot of. A lot of 80s, 90s stuff I grew up on, and one, you know, it was just a goof, and circling back, that got me into Deadline, and going to UCAC and everything was a super important, amazing thing. And now, to answer your question 7 hours later, let's see who some of the people are that I've met that I really like.
I completely forgot about that question.
Because it reminds, well, one of the, okay, so, when the people say who are the nicest people, so Sergio Aragonés is like top of the list.
Nice. Yeah, you're a big Mad guy as well, aren't you? You're Mad and Crazy and all that sort of thing. Big influences on you, are they? Or?
Well, Mad was a huge influence.
Yeah.
My biggest influences in comics were Marvel Comics, Peanuts as a kid, newspaper comic strips and whatnot. I loved Tintin was running in a children's magazine out here.
Okay.
So I really that was my first exposure to the, you know, a kind of like adventure story, because I hadn't read Barks and I hadn't read The Spirit that was like a little hard to, that was hard to come by. I think Warren was publishing that when I was a kid, but I would not have seen those. I mean, back then distribution to stuff was really tough. I never saw a Charlton comic on the stands in my life.
We very rarely got them over here, Charlton. No. It's only recently I've kind of discovered them myself. Yeah,
they would turn to like vampire ashes by the time they reached you over there.
That's true. They weren't the best quality with a paper.
Digital ink was created for Charlton. It's just like, those comics are amazing. They're like Ed Wood movies with staples. They did not care. They would put them pages in however, you know. They would apparently choose the stories by thickness. They'd have them on shelves, and they go, "Well, I need about this much story to fill this one out." Oh, unbelievable! You know, I mean, comics is like coming out of the dregs of that still. You know, the lack of professionalism and the cheapness and the craziness. It's one of the things I love about comics, but it's also infuriating if you, as a profession, as an industry. But Sergio, yeah, Mad, the guys who influenced me the most growing up as far as drawing went, and I guess humor would be Kurtzman and Elder, yeah. Hart Kurtzman and Bill Elder, because Mad used to staple in 50s reprints in the super specials in the summer and winter and whatnot, and I just love that. Like the King Kong parody, Ping Pong.
Yeah. There's there is floating about in my comic room somewhere a copy where they did an EastEnders parody, which I might have to send you.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny. That's odd. Of course I wouldn't see that, you know.
Yeah.
But I love the amount of detail. I love the freewheeling. Every panel was full of jokes. That kind of that definitely got Bill Elder is a hero, an art hero to me, a comics hero. But then Lee and Kirby, I mean, whatever I say about Lee, I have really conflicted feelings about him because he was a pop culture father to me, you know, like to a lot of kids. Exactly. But then there are people who find things, there are people who don't want to know how the world works, and they can believe that Stan Lee was just the greatest thing on earth. And then there are people who are become a little more cynical and realize Jack and Stan never liked each other, really.
Really? Do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
They didn't hang out or anything. It was not a situation like where Kurtzman and Elder, you know, hung out, where Gaines and Feldstein were socialized and were friends. I mean, you know, people talk about, you know, Jack Kirby, they kind of infantilize Kirby at times to defend him. Lee and everybody, but him and Joe Simon were two of the biggest. They were like the Liefeld and McFarlane, in a lot of ways. Them, Eisner, Iger, a lot of these people. They were already successful. It drives me nuts sometimes when I see these tweets, people tweeting about how, remember, Jack Kirby was 45 when he co-created the Fantastic Four, and I was like, well, how old was he when he co-created Captain America?
Exactly. We've talked a bit about it on here that, you know. Stan was the office boy, wasn't he? He was running and getting them sandwiches. Just, you know, sort
of like. I mean, by a lot of accounts, he was the putz. You know, I mean, he's a bit of a schmucky guy who fell. He stepped in a lot of good shit. He did a lot of smart things. He was funny and personable. And there are stories about him being a decent guy. But a lot of times, when it came to the clinch, when it came to the gut check, he kept his mouth shut, and or did the wrong thing. It was whatever benefited him to look best. When comics weren't important in the 80s, he gave people credit a lot. He will talk about the Silver Surfer being created wholly by Jack Kirby in the Son of Marvel Comics introductions, because in the 70s, none of this stuff looked like it was going to go anywhere, and it didn't matter. So he will admit straight up, the Silver Surfer was created by Jack Kirby. I had nothing to do with it. He drew it into the comic, and I don't know how any judge on earth who's not paid off or ignorant can look at Jack Kirby's original pages and not read the plot notes all over those things, and the notes for dialogue, and then see how the comics come out and not think Jack Kirby co-created all this stuff, co-wrote a lot of this stuff, made up a lot of this stuff. I mean, it's just obvious to anybody in comics who's being honest. You know, I mean, look at Ditko. Ditko was the best. Ditko was probably, if Kirby was a giant bugaboo for Marvel's legal department, okay, right. They finally settled because they knew they were in the soup, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a reason that they settled, because they could have lost the barn. Ditko they would probably dance in with champagne every time something happened with Spider-Man, knowing that Ditko would never sue them, that he wasn't
really?
That
okay.
Because he's credited. One of the things that the judges said in the Kirby case in New York a few years before the settlement, when Kirby kept getting overturned, and it was like, how could they say he never created anything or wrote anything? That was one of the judgments this one judge had. When you can, the lawyers should just show him where Kirby was credited for creating the Silver Surfer in the comics, where he's credited for ideas and letters pages back in the day. Ditko is the only guy who got a co-writer, co-plotter credit on Spider-Man, and I believe he got it on Doctor Strange. Okay. But there's actual, I mean, hard right there in the comics, baked in the credits and baked in the letters pages, where Ditko is credited as a creator.
I mean, Ditko's a strange one, because he kept coming back, didn't he? He kept, well, I know we talked about
Kirby. So did Kirby. I mean,
yeah, yeah.
People got to eat. People got to work. This is an entirely different group of people from us. We can't think about how we're a bunch of we're cartoonists now, creators now, by and large, are sitting around scratching our heads, spending a week trying to fix a panel.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And we've never been to war. We you know, we don't have five kids in the suburbs, and we have to keep up the payments.
You were on the Deadline tour. I think that counts as being to war, doesn't it? Is that similar?
That was me being someone else's child. I had to take care of. Because we were on the highway, and I opened up the side of the van and hung out of it, and apparently scared some people, which. That was just stupid, typical behavior of mine. I was a little self-destructive and stuff. And
we've all been there, but, dude. Though, do you know what I mean? It's they were the times, though. That was before the internet and before everyone videoing everything you did. And
yeah,
you know.
That's what we Brooklyn kids did. We hung out of vans at 70 miles an hour. I was stupid. Except I'll tell you one thing though. Whatever I did that scared somebody on that tour, the drug use of certain members of the scene terrified me. Holy shit. That was
a Nazi level drug. Yeah, that's all. Yeah.
And stepfather was a narcotics cop. And I was like, woo, this is, I mean, the alcohol I understood because half my friends were drunks. And, you know, drinking is something you do, but we were not a big, that was something.
You basically toured the States with Deadline, did you? Is that the story there? Is it?
No, it was the UK.
Oh, okay. Where did you go? Can you remember? Or
I went to the floor. I went out. One night I was so hopped up on a variety of things. We were at the, what was the club? Now I can't remember it. There was one in New York and there was one in, wherever the hell we were. Shit. It was in a church.
All right.
Former church out here. Now I cannot remember the name of the club. It was a big goth joint, disco and everything. Well, anyway, I was out of my mind. And it was kind of like a Ditko splash page. They were just laughing heads and floating in the air. I was obviously some kind of spectacle for about 20 minutes. But it was pretty fantastic. I had a great time. But the thing that's great is that I didn't have to drive anywhere. You know, I don't want to do it. You know, it was, I felt really safe. I remember sitting in a pub in Glasgow. I'm probably pronouncing it terrible. Sorry. With like Frank Plowright and maybe a bunch of people. McRae might've been there. It was just a whole bunch of people. And it was great. We just sat in this pub for like 10 hours eating, drinking, and people kept coming and going. It was one of the nicest, just most enjoyable days of my life. And
that's
we were all
McRae for you, though. McRae's great company. And he can swallow a pint of beer in one swallow, I think. I haven't seen him. Yeah.
I think the story was that John was a teetotaler until somebody got him started. And
right, okay.
Like, he was like me, because I didn't drink until I was like 20 or something like that. I just never drank at parties. I was a real Boy Scout. And that's why in my mid-20s, I was still like a high school kid because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I was a slob. John's great. I love John. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
John's
so good.
John's such a – he's just one of the – now there's a gentleman and a great guy and a good dance partner. And he is. He's great. He's such a panic. He's terrific. Glenn Dillon, I love Glenn. I loved Steve Dillon. That was terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Philip Bond is wonderful. I didn't get a bad vibe off of one person from Deadline. I don't know if you could say that about any kind of large anthology or project. And I liked everybody. I mean, Shaky Kane, I didn't understand. There were big question marks in my head half the time, but he was great.
We've talked to Shaky Kane, and we felt the same.
As Sarah says, it's Shaky Kane 2000. I don't care if he doesn't sign his name that way. We always call him Shaky Kane 2000. Disraeli, whatever his – I can't remember. He was nice. I goofed on his name because Demon Drossman was a little poncy. Is that the word?
Yeah,
but everybody was cool. Everybody was cool. I mean, Rachel was nice, but I probably stayed away from her because I probably felt like I was like a little monster child around, you know, humans. I loved everybody's work. Carol Swain, I think, did some stuff for Deadline, but I didn't meet her. I met Hunt Emerson, but didn't know it, and that killed me.
Right, okay.
We had a
Right, yeah.
large group of people. It was at, I think, the second convention that I did. I did four of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
The last time I went with my girlfriend, now wife, with Sarah, and David Mazzucchelli and his wife Richmond, and I behaved myself, I believe. But we had this, it was one of those things where you're at a convention and everybody's leaving. It's the night's finally done. Everybody's pretty much either drunk or exhausted or both, and you're getting to the elevators, but nobody really actually gets in the elevators, and you end up having another conversation.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
there was a ring of people, and I'm loving this. I mean, God, this is, I don't want to meet most musicians. I don't want to meet actors. I don't even know who actors are anymore and things. I'm a sad old man. I don't know directors. I don't give a crap. But I mean, I love meeting cartoonists and
Yeah,
comics creators. I mean,
me
I
too.
just, they are
Yeah.
my rock stars in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I don't know how to play music. I don't know how to act, but I know how to draw and write. I don't know how these people do it as well as they do. I have paper and I have ink and I have pens and I have a thinking brain, but I can't do what name 20 people I love does. Do you know what I'm saying? I wish. So, I mean, they're, to me, they're magical almost.
Do you
So
think
yeah.
is that inspiring to you then? Does that sort of push you forward to try and do the better work?
Absolutely. It depresses the living shit out of me.
Yeah.
One of the things that I was sort of getting at earlier is that now that you can see all these, now that the industry is larger, now that the floodgates have opened up and we're finally have parity as far as women goes, and we're getting there with other non cis white guys like me, you know, that we're seeing different comics by different people to the point where it's becoming commonplace. It's what we want. It's what we said we wanted out of comics, and it is what we should want out of comics, right? But a lot of people obviously can't handle it.
Yeah.
But this is exactly what comics should be like, just more of it. And people like me are going to get lost in this. You know, I'm once again a struggling creator in a lot of ways because my a lot of my I don't have a lot of younger readers. It feels like, you know, I've been. You know, it's I can I, you see how people's careers fade out,
Well,
and I've been loving
the Beast of Burden must be grabbing
yeah.
a few
Well,
new, right?
that's the
Yeah.
saving grace I have right now as far as that goes. But definitely, my work really peaked in the '90s as far as my humor work, and it's hard to get people to want to read some of that stuff. It didn't translate overseas, so I don't have a lot of international work because the pop culture and the density of the lettering and the inside baseball, the obscurity of so many of the references, really denied an audience for Dork, Eltingville, and
Yeah, I can get that around Eltonville, but surely Beasts of Burden must
No, that's
that.
the that's the first thing I've done. That I mean, I was in my mid-40s, and it's the first thing I've done. We've had multiple foreign editions. We just, in fact, contacted about a new one for the first book. But the thing is, the beauty of the industry right now is that there's more people in it. But it's tough for people like me who are old hat, maybe. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, it's like if the young ones become dated to a degree, what is Morecambe and Wise? And
Morecambe and
I'm more.
Wise are still funny though, dude. That's
Well, here's the thing. You
yeah.
think so? I think so. But you know.
Yeah.
It's you know what I mean? It's the goons, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? It
Yeah.
becomes more obscure, like the way SCTV is over
Yeah.
here.
And the audience
Or
changes, doesn't it? I mean, for instance, like we love that stuff, but I see some of these sitcoms that, people find funny now, and I just think, really? Is
yeah.
this what constitutes as comedy now?
You could
And
say Big Bang Theory, I'll agree with you.
yeah. It's shit.
Yeah,
It's
no, I
shit.
don't
I'll
agree
just
with
say
that.
it. It's shit.
But I mean, I aged. I mean, I still like a lot of stuff for nostalgia reasons. But I mean, I know I like it. Sometimes it's funny still, or creepy, or good, or whatever. It's a horror movie. But you know, I grew up. I mean, I loved '80s. I loved '70s Marvel comics. I have no interest in owning them. You know, I just don't really need a collection of. I've tried taking them out from the library and I read them and I go, you know, these just don't hold up. And a lot of my old work doesn't hold up. And that's just so that you have to stay in the game and do the best you can. But the industry being larger now, what you just said about that, I mean, I've always like had a problem with my art and my writing, and I have a lot of problems with my own, how I feel about myself. And I've written about that in Dork, and it kind of comes through in some of my other work. I have a lot of emotional issues. I have a lot of self-doubt. I have a lot of some self-loathing. Right. I have a lot of problems. So when I would look at somebody like Jamie Hewlett or Phil Bond's art, or David Mazzucchelli, or the Hernandez brothers, or I look at then people who came, a lot of the people who do superhero comics, somebody like Becky Cloonan, I look at this art and I just go, or Amanda Connor, and I just go, I will never be able to do this. And it's been really hard for me, because a lot of the things that I wish that I could draw, I realize I can't. I just can't. Mm-hmm. I can't do Beast of Burden. I can't draw Blackwood really by myself.
One of the most pleasurable artistic reading experiences I've had for a while, dude, was the last few issues of Eltonville. I mean, that's the detail. Just those pages are just incredible, dude.
It's gravy because I don't like the meat. You know, all right. The details hide. The details is a lot of overcompensating. I mean, but at the same time, I also enjoy doing them. I mean, it's self-deprecating, but I do realize that. And a lot of it is also OCD, which a lot of people in comics are dealing with. You just can't leave the page alone. That's one problem a lot of us have.
But you switch up between those big scenes with like literally hundreds of people on a page to them sitting in the car, you know, discussing things.
And yeah, but if you look at them in the car, look at those hatching lines.
Right. Okay.
Here's the funny thing about the car scene. I had to redraw the heads for almost every one of those panels because I had to cross hatch so much that it was coming out as mud when it was reduced.
I get you.
So,
it's great Saren stuff, had, though, man. Let's Saren absolutely brilliant.
I had to draw like 24 heads, and then she had to drop them in on the computer because I had overdrawn everything to the point of making it.
There is a real, your soul sort of like really falls when you get to a point of a page or whether it's a pinup or commission or whatever, and you're drawing it, and there's a point when you're really happy with it, and then you push forward a little bit, you think, oh, actually, no, maybe I'm not happy with it. I'll just do this, and then I'll just do this, and within 5 minutes, you've fucked it.
But that's your brain telling you you've ruined it a lot of the
it's
time.
Like
you
know that. That Italian woman who tried to fix the painting a few years ago.
Yeah. And she, legendary.
You know, she was certainly not the best inker painter out there. She's not getting any Eisners for that. But I mean, it's just. But here's the point: is now we have the internet, and every day I am assaulted by beautiful artwork by 17-year-old people from all over the world. Who are so much better than I will ever be. And then there's people who have remained excellent, like Garcia Lopez or Walt Simonson, again, the Hernandez brothers, a lot. And then the funny thing is, I've always wanted to do a strip where I'm sitting there going like, look, I can never, you know, where I'm sitting there with my wife and, you know, we've had this kind of conversation. I go, look at this amazing art. Look at this person's amazing art. Look, the anatomy is perfect. You know, it's like Kevin Nolan or somebody like that, you know?
Yeah.
Or somebody who can break it down, but still like Evan Shane or, again, Becky Cloonan. Yeah. I love her work. I mean, there's a million people out there. That's the other thing. I can't keep up. You know, I don't know who the 20-year-olds who are killing it are because I always thought that you can't keep up with the amount of books out there.
Yeah, you can't anymore. You can't. That's part of the problem, though, I think. You know,
It drives me nuts, though, because I've totally fallen apart on independent work as far as like art comics go. The New York Public Library has amazing range of books. I mean, I just got my favorite thing is Monsters. It's on the shelf downstairs. But between all the manga coming out, all the small press coming out, I don't really keep up with the superhero stuff. But there are some things that I'm following here and there. Ether is a cool book. Oh. I think that's Matt Kitt and David Rubin. I mean, David Rubin's an amazing artist, you know?
Yeah.
So like, I'll look at these things, these people who do these beautiful, beautiful Garcia Lopez. I go, look how beautiful this is.
We were only talking Garcia Lopez this week, weren't we, guys? He is fucking outstanding.
Yeah, he is fucking big.
Also, amazing. Yeah. One of the nicest people I've met, but like, I was like shaking when I met him and I didn't know what to say to him. So I was just like, you know, he's so cool. I love his work. I mean, he's somebody who's just like, valued by the community, I think, more than the fans, and he's never worked on the hot property.
You're right, yeah. I was reading Cinder and Ash this week, which is an amazing book.
But who's like, you know, I mean, he's always he's perfect in some ways. Do you know what I mean? It's like you don't know, it's almost like you don't notice. He's like he's incredible. There's pieces that he's done that Nolan inked. This Doctor Strange Fate one shot in the Amalgam is just one of the prettiest mainstream comics I've ever seen in my life. His stuff is gorgeous. They're still using all of his artwork from the 80s on all this marketing.
Yeah.
No matter who is popular drawing comics from the 90s on, they're still using this. You're still seeing John Romita art, John Buscema art, Kirby.
Yeah.
Sometimes Kane, sometimes
Cole. Yeah, I was going to say Gil Kane occasionally, yeah.
And you're seeing Garcia Lopez's DC work like crazy on everything. Infantino, yeah. You're still seeing these clean versions of everything.
Yeah, maybe a bit of Perez here and there. Yeah, yeah.
But, Perez was another person whose work I loved as far as superhero comics went. So I had Kirby, George Perez, Bill Elder, and Kurtzman. So I had to become a detail-oriented ding-dong. Right. Also, Wally Wood on the Mad stuff before I got into the EC stuff. I love detail, but I also like detail in movies. I liked movies where I liked slapstick. I liked big comedies where things were collapsing. I liked Buster Keaton. I liked It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Yeah.
I liked chaos.
Yeah.
I can see you as a Marx Brothers fan. I take it.
Marx Brothers, Laurel and Hardy. Abbott and Costello. I mean, you know, everything. I was a big comedy nut growing up. I watched all the Britcoms and British shows that were being shown on PBS and in syndication. I saw.
I've heard you mention the Goodies as an influence.
I love the Goodies. Now, when I first met people would groan when I mentioned them.
In They're always like the sort of second-rate Python, really. I suppose.
There's a lot of things about Python that I still love, but a lot of Python is very stiff and didactic to me now, and the Goodies is just fucking ridiculous. I was a geek in like so many ways. I was a comic book geek. I was a comedy geek. Like I'd be watching Willy Wonka, and I go, "Oh, that's Tim Brooke Taylor," and I'm like, "What the fuck? What Brooklynite American needs to go? Oh, I almost bought a Bill Oddy album, but I didn't have the money for it. What are you, stupid?" I'm like I watch a Casino Royale, and there's one of the two Ronnies is in there.
Oh,
and I'm like,
is. Yeah, yeah.
I need to find a life, you know, Ronnie Graham and Ronnie Barker?
Ronnie Corbett and Ronnie Barker, yeah.
Sorry. And then I would start connecting up the way nerds do. I'd go, oh, well, look at this. Eric Idle did some writing for that show. And
the Frost Report and all that sort of thing, yeah.
I was a nut for – I mean, I'm watching Dave Allen, who I think is Irish.
Yeah.
Love Dave Allen. Yeah, he's brilliant. Yeah, a lot of comedians need to credit Dave Allen more because he's got that sort of laconic storytelling thing. You know, he's just sitting there smoking. We didn't see that as much here. You know.
So we had. Of course, everybody was watching Benny Hill, but I'd be watching the two Ronnies.
Now, I mean, for me, Ronnie Barker is one of the greatest comedy actors.
Yeah, Porridge is the greatest.
That will ever live.
Is he the little one or the big one?
He's the bigger one.
Yeah. The big one. He's very funny. He had a show about a corner shop or something that he owned.
Open all hours.
Right. So I mean, I was such an Anglophile. So getting into Deadline was very interesting from that.
Yeah.
But I loved the Goodies. The Goodies made me laugh. So I sat with my daughter watching a piece of footage from the Goodies, and I just found on YouTube about a year ago. And I didn't go down the rabbit hole because I would have just continued watching it, but I found myself laughing a lot.
Yeah. I mean, Ecky Thump is still a phrase right now. Yeah.
I mean, it's a shame that there's the blackface. I didn't remember that stuff.
I'd forgotten all that. Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean.
There's a lot of blackface in a lot of the things, unfortunately. If you like old stuff, you're going to hit a lot of racism. Yeah. And it sucks. But, you know what I mean? I don't have a problem with people not doing stuff. I'm not a fan of the Ricky Gervais. Let's piss people off. It must be doing something right. No, it's bullshit. It's lazy writing. Things changed. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and he's not funny anyway. But I mean, pissing people off. You can piss people off just by smearing shit on their face or doing a ring effect.
I've tried it. Yeah, you can. Yeah.
Like jump scares. It's like pissing people off is like a jump scare. It's cheap. It's cheap heat in wrestling. It's the easiest way to get a reaction. Yeah. And you know, if you're a well-fed white guy, and nobody's fucking with you, unless you're getting reviewed for your bad comedy, it's very easy to just go, "I don't get it." I don't get it. Why are people so uptight about shit? Because you haven't lived that life.
Yeah.
Now, I'm somebody who's written stuff in the. I look at some old panels and things and I go, I stopped using certain words. It wasn't to get people to like me or to get people to stop bothering. It was because I realized that's bullshit.
Yeah.
There's no reason to be. I mean, there were times when you were writing and you were using an epithet like faggot, okay? It is part of the character and you are clearly making a choice to show this character in context realistically.
Yeah.
There's a difference between that. And just using it as you know, you watch the media.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, the people in Eltingville use a lot of racial stuff, but that's because they're scumbags. You know, it's like.
Yeah, I mean, they're horrible people, but the fact is, you have to know where they're coming from. When you're just using if you're just using fat jokes or using the word retarded or something like that, and you're just throwing that out there because it's a placeholder for a real joke.
Yeah.
And you're just chucking that out there. I mean, yes, you could say, well, it's realistic. But at the same time, you can tell when somebody's writing realistic dialogue to make a point.
Yeah.
To show character. And that's either revealing or you're condemning that behavior or whatnot. Or when you were just like in the 80s and you're not thinking. When, you know, my earlier strips, when you're not thinking and you're just spraying funny words out there.
Yeah.
With caring. And I think you can grow up, you can care, and you can still do crazy humor that doesn't have to insult people for no reason whatsoever, if you know what I'm saying. Not because of their behavior, but because of who they are.
Yeah.
There's stuff that I cringe at in my old work, but it's like, you know, course correction.
Yeah.
And it's not to be politically correct. It's because you're not an asshole. You can still be funny. I mean, you know, do you like Mike Kupperman's work? Anyone?
I don't know it well enough. I've looked it up. Yeah, but yeah,
he's hilarious. You know, now I'm trying to remember her name. The cartoonist who does she's doing a lot of television work now. Jeez, she did BoJack Horseman, but she does.
Sarah Silverman.
No. She does art and stuff, but she does her own comics too. But anyway, they're not punching down, making fun of people for their looks or any shit like that. And hilarious, and they're certainly safe. There's just, you know, there's laziness, and there's also wanting to be better. The same way that you want to make your ink line better or to become a better writer, you should also just be thinking about the content.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm. Well, no matter what you will say about your work, Evan, and I know, and you're not going to believe a single word of what I'm about to say next, but I know that obviously there's a lot of our listeners who are big fans. We're big fans.
Yeah.
And and you can't stop me because I'm recording this, so you have to believe it. No, but you know, I mean, looking forward to seeing even more work from you. How well is Blackwood been received, by the way, since it?
I have absolutely no idea.
is that still in the ether at the moment? You know, is that?
No, I'm starting the second series of scripts like tomorrow.
Awesome.
Okay. You know, I never finish a sentence, do I? I just go off and make new ones. So,
dude, it's awesome.
Even they did. Even
so, we got in the elevator. We got in the elevator at UCAC. Somebody says, "Hey, what'd you think of Hunt Emerson?" And I said, "Oh my God, what do you mean?" And they said, "Yeah, it was Hunt Emerson hanging out with us." And I went, "Oh, fuck!" And of course, they never met him yet.
Why is Hunt Emerson not on everyone's lips all the time? He's fucking outstanding.
He's fantastic. Yeah. Well. Here's the real thing. The shop that I worked at was a huge. I grew up at the right time, in a very good place. I was in New York. We had the Village Voice and the New York Press, so we got tons of.
And the Village Voice was free, was it not? Is it a free magazine?
The Voice was free, and the Press was free. The Voice was not free. It was cheap, you know, and the Press was free. And between them, you had Matt Groening, Linda Barry, you had Charles Burns. David Lynch was doing a comic strip.
Oh, yeah, he was. Yeah, I remember now. Yeah, about a dog or something, wasn't it? Yeah.
Kaz, I think Kaz was in there. But you had all these amazing cartoonists. Mark Newgarden, Mark Bayer doing Amy and Jordan. So you got opened. What was the name of it? Oh, I'm blanking. Steven, a weird strip that somebody by Doug Allen, which was a strip that I absolutely loved. And then.
Okay.
Saw at college somebody had put a strip up on a locker, and I finally found it in the New York Press, and I was pushing Kim Thompson and Fantagraphics to pick that up, and eventually Kitchen Sink did.
Okay.
But you were exposed to all this stuff basically for free. And I working in the comic shop, Catalan, we were getting Escape.
Escape's great. Yeah.
I was also buying the New Musical Express and The Face and ID and a bunch of other things. So I was getting comic strips through there. I get some weird things like Rockets. Do you remember that strip?
No.
I loved it. It was, I can't remember where it ran, but it was a space opera parody by this artist who had a very wiggly line. And one of the characters had like eight, his name was like Limbs or Legs.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I do know this. I'm trying to think.
It was terrific. So
didn't the creator do something with Frank Black at some point as well?
I think you're right. Yes. Yeah. And the other thing, a lot of the music I was listening to, people like The Piz and Charles Burns and Coop and Bob Fingerman, all these people were doing art for these things. It was just it was a real synergistic. I don't know. Sounds like a horror movie, Synergy or whatever. It was in so many things that I liked. You know, the bands, the show posters, the free weeklies, and then I was working in this comic store with Jim Hanley, who really believed in comics as a medium. He didn't just stock Marvel, DC. He was early, taking on early like European work. Early manga from Eclipse and Barefoot Gen and things like that. He was finding comics wherever he could, and strip reprints. He pushed me on the Spirit. He pushed all of us to read, you know, all the trades. So yeah, I got into Hunt Emerson through Knockabout, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
So we were just the craziest stuff. Raw was coming out. It was and the Black and White explosion. So you got all this insane, mostly terrible work. But that's how, you know, and everything was being reprinted, starting to be reprinted. So Mad was coming out. The EC libraries were being done. So I fell into that hole. So, yeah, I met Hunt Emerson and didn't even know it. Yeah, he is fantastic. But I don't know. There's just certain people. He reminds me a lot of Roger Langridge, who is a gentleman.
Yeah.
And a
squad. We know Roger. Yeah,
I love Roger. Yeah. I love Roger. I have bored Roger to death with my, you know, you guys are getting me for one night. I've sat with him, and he's actually assigned books to me and going like something like, may your mouth never.
We do a yearly convention with him, and he is really good. Really funny guy.
He's an undervalued. There's all these undervalued cartoonists that it's interesting that a lot of them do humor.
Yeah.
It's really tough to do humor in comics, which sounds counterintuitive, but it's true. We love cartoons that move. We love newspaper comics, especially the bad ones, it seems, Garfield, Kathy. But you do comics in the only humor comics that we really go for. I mean, it's changing to a small degree because of web comics.
Yeah.
So you have somebody like John Allison, I think is his name, who does Bad Machinery.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. But it's very hard for me to track web comics down until they're collected because I'm old. You know, I cannot scan the internet for comics. But he's a humor person who has broken out. And the guy who does Hilda.
Yeah, Luke Pearson. Yeah, we're friends with Luke. Yeah, he's been on the show.
He's fantastic. But
I'll tell you who you're thinking of there. Stephen Appleby. I've just remembered.
Is that it?
Yeah, the one who did Rockets. Yeah.
I love
that. Another British creator.
I have a really weird collection of those that came in a like cardboard envelope that was screen printed on.
Right. Was,
also, you got the weirdest comics back then because nobody knew what they were doing. Now there's so many beautiful. There was so much beautiful printing now. That's another thing that's great about comics these days is that things are being printed the way they should be rather than on either terribly cheap paper, terribly shiny, awful looking paper with no art direction. Because comics only attracts historically, comics only attracts comics fans. That's in the marketing, in the making, in the selling, in the designing. That's changed a bit, but you know, it was basically like putting on a show in your backyard. You know, who had a sewing machine gets to be the person who makes the costumes, whether they're good or not. They're just into it, and that's another reason comics has always been a weak sister to other media. But yeah, humor comics. I mean, Jay Stevens is a cartoonist I absolutely love,
right?
Who's a Canadian. Andy Watson is a UK cartoonist who is one of the nicest people, and a friend from the SLG days.
Okay.
Who did Skeleton Key and has done a number of graphic novels.
Yeah.
We developed a show based on Skeleton Key for Sunbow Entertainment, and it got bought. Sarah and I, he asked them to hire us to do the Bible, which is the best jobs we ever had, and the show really could have done something, I think. Nickelodeon sunk the East Coast office, I think.
I wonder what you were going to say then when you started that sentence.
But yeah, this, you know, the Hernandez brothers are great to hang out with. There are a lot of people who are great in comics. The problem is it's hard to think of them because all you ever think of are the assholes.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
On that anymore. But I mean, when you have the Ethan Van Sciver's and the the ones who are slowly starting to get frozen out, because there's a lot of talk about whisper networks and whatnot, and I feel you know, it's not my place to feel bad really, but you kind of wish that I'm not as social with cartoonists as I used to be. I don't know anyone at Marvel or DC anymore. Yeah. I don't know anybody at Archie. I don't know anybody real. I know one person at Boom, maybe two. I don't even know how to get work from these people. I don't know how to call people up and say, give me, that's one of, like I was saying, it's one of my problems. When the Eltingville Club pilot did not get picked up at the Adult Swim back in the early 2000s, I was talking to our producer, Keith, who we worked with on Space Ghost. Now, we got Space Ghost because of the Milk and Cheese comics. We got Eltingville because of Space Ghost. We got Superman job on Superman from Paul Dini because he liked Milk and Cheese, and then they got to know our other work, and we became friendly. I got all my TV. We got all our TV work from people being nice enough to think that we could do something for them. We never had an agent or a manager because I was too scared, too freaked out to get one. This has been a real hamper.
For those who want to see Eltonville, though, it is on YouTube, isn't it? I watched it yesterday on YouTube. Yeah. You can see most of it, I think. The first three parts is split into 10-minute sections.
That's all there is, three parts. There's no more. Yeah, but I mean, like, we got the job on Yo Gabba Gabba because we hired the Aquabats to do the themes for Eltingville, and
I don't understand that program. I tried to watch Yo Gabba Gabba today. It's like watching was it Groovies in the Heart, but a kids program.
Yeah, that's what's great about it, man.
Yeah.
Shut you up. No, it really is. I love it. I loved it, and I loved it, and I couldn't believe we got to be part of that. Just like Space Ghost. That was another thing that was like, how the hell did we get on Space Ghost? And we ended up doing like 13 episodes.
That's the sort of thing that kids will remember watching and think, was that real, or was that some kind of weird dream I had as a kid?
Oh, and the funny thing is, the show's Yo Gabba Gabba is created by like these lovely Mormon fellows.
Really? Okay.
the Aquabats are like family-friendly entertainment. Always have been. You know what I mean? They're just the sweetest people. We managed to work. They did a thing that very few people did. When they got their show, they hired lots of people that they liked their work, that they've worked with in the past, or they've been friendly with, who they knew could fill a job. They spread work out to so many people. You had Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo. Somebody would call from a band like the John Reese from Rocket from the Crypt. My kid loves the show. Is there something I could do? So they introducing bands with his Swami Records Swami hat. Tim Armstrong is a cactus. Biz Markie does. It was just they basically paid back friends and hired people. We were hired to do a very small job, and it ended up rolling into us writing episodes because he actually said the greatest thing that anybody ever said to me. I asked him something, and he goes, I was really concerned about something, and I said, so why would you do that? Why would you have us do this, this, or that? And it was Chris, the Bat Commander, Christian from the Aquabats, Christian Jacobs, and he said, because we trust you. Right. And I was just fucking overwhelmed by that, you know? It's really hard to hit. I mean, you're talking about nice people in industry, and it's like we've been very lucky, but part of it is because I've kept my career very small, which is a weird thing to say considering the fact that we've done a decent amount of non-comics work, which when we were coming up, not a lot of people ended up doing. You know, we've done some live-action kids stuff, we've done cartoons, We've done magazine work. We just did something that we'll get. We just did a non-comics job in an area that we've never worked in before.
Okay.
That is going to get, it was a pretty interesting, again, somebody who just said, you know, we're going to try out some people whose work we like. My social anxieties have definitely hurt my career, and it's something that I've been trying to rebuild. I mean, we're in MAD again. Yeah. I've been in MAD for 10 years. That was just, work creates work.
Yeah.
What I've always said, and the thing is, I work like a maniac when I was in my 20s. I worked.
It's easier to get a job when you're in a job. Sometimes, isn't it? Also,
I was more social. I was meeting people at these conventions, which were smaller at the time, and there were fewer of them. Now there's 3 conventions a week, and none of them are inviting me. You know, it's like.
Because you weren't the third stormtrooper from the left on some fucking. You know what I mean?
And I will say,
there's a lot of comic supporting conventions now that don't necessarily have stormtroopers.
Oh god, yeah.
That's not that anyway.
Yeah.
I don't care if someone's invited. You know, if people want to come in for Star Wars and they see some comics and they see a Yo Gabba Gabba hardcover that Oni put out, I'm very happy to sell them one.
Yeah.
If I see Predator or The Mask that I've worked on, if I've got a collection of that, or the World's Funnest, or the Supergirl stories that Sarah and I did, everybody's comic has to have a first comic.
Exactly.
We just heard from somebody who has a shop in America, and they bought a piece of artwork from us. And the letter that they sent Sarah was that the first comic that she had ever bought was Dork, and then she bought Action Girl Comics because I was writing about it in
Nice.
And now she owns a store because we got people into comics. Now, however small someone's career is, you know that someone that's your favorite somebody loves your comic. I have to try to tell myself that more often. Because
we'll tell you all day. And I know I'll listen to you. Yeah.
If hiring you, there's a reason, you know.
Yeah.
You're not famous. I'm not going to fill a lot of seats in a convention. So, but the thing is, there's so many conventions now, and there's so many new faces.
You could do one every weekend, couldn't you, if you wanted to, I think.
Yeah. Even
on this side of the...
And we could talk for days, but we haven't got days. But,
dude, I could do 4 hours on Eltonville with you easily.
Yeah. And I tell you what, I think you are welcome back anytime.
God, yeah.
Evan.
Please do, man.
Yeah. No. I knew this was going to be money. and it has absolutely delivered. I think I might just call this series Talking with Dorkin. I just think that's the best.
Yeah, that'll do.
Yeah.
That's
a
good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's
oh, come on, man.
No, it's funny because my Sarah makes fun of that, because in camp in New Jersey, in Jewish camp, which is weird. Being a Jew going to a camp, I realized was a little weird. We were all kids like, hey, let's get all the Jews into one place in a camp. What? Oh, shit, our parents hate us. The goose stepping was annoying.
Yeah.
They called me talking dork because of the accent. But my wife would constantly say, you know, that's Talking Dorkin. And I was just like, yeah, you know. But that doesn't rhyme. I know.
But you've immediately become one of our favorites. So,
So, real quick, Blackwood is going to come back.
Awesome. Yeah. I love that series.
We have, like, no feedback on it, right, really. It's just, again, I know I'm harping on this, but the industry is so large. Last year was one of my best years in my career, and very few people noticed because the industry is that rich right now. I put out 2 miniseries, reprinted some of my books, and the Dork collection came out. And I'm fairly proud of
that's
the Dork.
A great collection as well. Yeah,
and
yeah.
It did not make money, and it sank without a trace.
Wow. Really?
It came out 10 years too, just like Eltingville. I should have put those out 10, 15 years ago, and I just did not have them together.
We are blessed with a listenership that we can say that likes to get in touch with creators and actually show them a bit of love after, especially after today's show. Don't be surprised if you have some strangers talk about how much they love.
Oh, we've been posting pages from or panels from Eltingville on our Facebook group, dude, and it's getting a great response.
Yeah. Oh, cool, thanks. Yeah, I'm not
still
on Facebook.
So true.
We're sending them your way on Twitter.
You guys have done more PR for me than the industry has in the last.
Where can people find you on Twitter?
Oh, I thought you were going to say, where can they farm it? I was going to say the bus station. on Twitter, I'm at just my name, Evan Dorkin, EvanDorkin.
Yeah.
And I'm on Instagram, same name, where I put a lot of artwork up. I actually enjoy being on Instagram more than Twitter.
Yeah.
Right now.
I think people like that, man. It's better, isn't it? It's less less poisonous, isn't it?
I don't know. There are a lot of people, you know, there's different worlds, you know. If I hear people talking about Instagram, but they have a lot of issues with it, and I've found it to be, at least in my particular situation and in a lot of the cartoonists and comics people that I follow, I think it's like the most positive. It's just a lot of people posting artwork and things and just liking, enjoying and commenting. I have not had one obnoxious interaction or uncomfortable interaction. It's just, I mean, I have many more followers on Twitter, and I can basically go, hey, look, I saved a child's life with comics yesterday, and I'll get like 3 likes. Can I get a retweet to save my friend's life through comics? I'll get 5 likes. But on Instagram, I can't get people to like us on Amazon for the book. Blackwood has 2 reviews.
Oh, all right.
And the new Beast of Burden has nothing.
Really?
It's like, I don't know what to do. You know, it's
come
like,
on, people. Let's amend that.
No, I don't. You know, fuck it. You know,
not asking for it, but we will, because that's a travesty. Yeah. Come on.
I've been asking for it since 1979.
Just in the back room of a comic shop. So we're here.
It's really hard. There's, you know, it's hard. I think one of the reasons some comic book creators are going a little nuts online is, one, it turns out they're assholes. You know, they're aging, raging jerks. But two, it is bewildering to find yourself in that situation that you have heard about. But it's like death and aging. You know, I'm getting older. I'm finding white. You know, there are more white hairs at my temples and whatnot. It gets harder to bend when I drop an eraser or a pencil. And at the same time, I've always talked to people about diversifying their portfolio and this and that when I go to schools, because there's a point where you are not going to be as popular generally. You're not going to be working on Ghost Rider or Batman or Spider-Man or whatnot, or there's going to be a shift in styles if you have that 90s style or whatever. And it's happening to me. I mean, if I didn't have Beast of Burden, I feel like I'd be out of the industry. But I do have Beast of Burden, and I am working for Mad and other things because I've always had other interests and have been lucky enough to get pulled in other directions.
Beast of Burden is great, dude. I have to say, I read it on Comixology, so I read it on there. But it's a fucking outstanding book.
Yeah,
they all are, all the series. Yeah,
it's funny. It is heartening to see people basically saying that they can't believe that. I remember once Darwin Cook coming by my table at Heroes Con, and he knocked on the table and he pointed at Beast and he said, "I didn't know you had it in you." And I get it, but you read my old work, there's tinges of what Beast is in that story you mentioned, that Hellboy Rogers story.
Yeah, definitely.
There's always been an emotional content to my stuff. There's always been a kind of...
Was it Baby in a Microwave? Similar?
Well, no. That was Frost Baby in the Microwave. Giant.
Sorry, pardon me.
I've always had a kind of sad thing, a kind of melancholy aspect in my work, a kind of sense
even
of
failure. Even Myron has got that melancholy. It always ends that way, doesn't it? Yeah.
But Beast, I hope now that we have it back on track, we've got Benjamin Dewey on the art chores with Nate Picos on lettering, and Jill, I'm not, you know, Jill is always co-creator. If she chooses to come back in,
okay,
we'll see what happens with that. But you know, she's got the next series is going to be one part by her, then one part by Ben.
Okay, cool.
And then that's going to be finally, we're going to be collecting all the stuff from 2010 up to that as our third collection.
Oh, lovely.
And Presence comes out in May and June, then the collection comes out in October, and that'll have the Hellboy crossover and everything finally.
Nice.
By that time, Sarah and I just finished writing the new Wise Dogs four-issue miniseries called Occupied Territory, which Ben and Nate will be doing.
Great.
Awesome.
And that's
a great series, man.
There
I'm a big dog
a
lover.
Lot to come yeah. this year from Evan
Dodgen. Yeah, Blackwood 2 maybe gets in this year, but the Fishes will be working on that, Veronica and Andy. And hopefully we'll have some more things to announce later this year.
Oh, so stay tuned to his Twitter, stay tuned to his Instagram, just stay tuned to this show because we're going to have him back without a shadow of a doubt.
Well, and, bring me on, and what I'll do is I'll actually answer questions.
Oh, no,
that's a lot. I've heard you on other podcasts.
The value for money that we got this week was amazing. So
I'm trying so hard, and I just can't do it. Like I haven't finished like six of the things I started to say, but
but that's what we want. You know, it's a to be continued.
Yeah, so. But it's not what I want. I want to be like a part of society at some point that functions.
Well, you're part of this show now, so that ain't going away anytime soon. Thank you very much, Evan.
Cheers, Evan.
Thanks for enduring me, guys. Thanks.
Take care. That's awesome.
Bye bye.
How was that?
It's pretty good, wasn't it?
Look at that.
We definitely got to have him back on. That was like tip of the iceberg, dude. Yeah. I got to tell you there. Yeah. I literally could talk to him about Elton Bill and Milk and Cheese and Dork and stuff for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah, and clearly,
I've become a bit obsessed this week because it's all I've read is his stuff all week.
Yeah. I mean, just the Milk and Cheese collection in itself is just value for money. Absolute value for money.
Go to YouTube and look up the Elton Bill pilot, and it's a fairly good representation of what the comic will be. Yeah. They actually, it's very similar to the first few issues of the comic. They have like a quiz off, which actually I did begin to worry that we are the Elton Bill club.
Yeah.
At one point during that quiz off. And I kept sending you messages saying, "I think is this us? I'm not sure."
Yeah, you're definitely the dude with the ponytail.
Shut up.
No, that was brilliant. Thank you again, Evan, for joining us this week, and we will have him back because, you know, and hopefully someone will invite him and get him over for a convention. So
Thought Bubble, come on, I know you listen.
Yeah,
get him over. He's perfect for your demographic.
Yeah,
perfect.
Absolutely perfect. Yes, but
to go back to Harry again, but you know, it's worth getting him.
Now for the rest of the show, I guess. What can we do now? I mean, we're just relaxing, aren't we, Tony? We're just taking it easy. Dan's had to leave us, so because he's got a busy gangster life, hasn't he?
He's okay. Don't worry.
Yeah, he's okay. But he will be back next week. Yeah, he's totally fine.
Yeah.
So but before then, we've got some shout outs this week.
We have.
What have you got, Tony?
I have, as usual, got a few. Firstly, Saffron is on Kickstarter. It's from Sam London, Rosie Alexander. And it's an all-ages space-time travel story, which is really great, I have to say. I've been privy to reading the script for it and talking to the creators recently for a piece I've done, and then a couple of other things. And it's coming out through Fairspark as well, so it's going to be raising money for Kids in Hospital. But go to Kickstarter, Saffron. It's really, really good. The art is so good, and it's just such a nice one. And when you speak to Sam, he's actually tested it out in some of his... he's shown it to kids and they've really loved it, and he's got little bits of feedback from them, and it's a really nice little thing he's doing. Otherwise, head over to very important. Head over to Millsverse for details of a great opportunity to work with Pat Mills on a great new all ages anthology, science fiction anthology called Space Warp. I know we talked to Pat. It's about a month and a half ago, I suppose, now about it. But I'm chatting a little bit behind the scenes with him and Lisa recently, and they've got their eye on a few artists, but they're still looking for artists. So get on over there. The opportunities are really there. I've been putting a few names forward to them, and they will go and look at your work, or will go and look at your portfolio around it. Go to millsverse.com, or just look Pat Mills up on Twitter, and you'll find out more about it. Are you going to do the 200th? Do you want to do a bit?
I am indeed. Yes. We're going to talk about it all the way up until it happens. But mark your calendars. May the 4th, 2019 is going to be. We're all going to be in the same place at the same time. Attempting to record a show live. We're not going to stream it live. We're not that technically minded. Jesus Christ, what do you expect from us?
Yeah.
But we're going to record it in a venue, which will be the Two Chairmen Pub, which is in Westminster,
right near St James's Park Tube, very close to that.
It's not far from Victoria like Station and things like that, and we hope
Parliament Square, very close to Parliament Square.
It looks like a great little place. We've got the upstairs, haven't we?
The oldest pub in London, apparently.
Is it really?
Yeah, I was reading about it the other day.
Oh dear. And they have no idea what's coming. but no, but it is going to be a good laugh. We're going to be there from 12 till 5. And basically, everyone's welcome.
Free entry.
Yeah, free entry. There's no tickets or anything like that. We're literally just rocking up in a
pub. Put everyone off.
Yeah. But like I say, 12 till 5 upstairs. And we'll record the show probably between 2 and 4. It's going to be like a Three Amigos show. I'm going to get some questions on like the email that the other two guys won't know about. They're not going to know the answers.
Nope.
So if you've got a question that you want to ask for episode 200, email it awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. I've already got a couple already, which are going to be funny. Going to be funny on the day. It's just going to be a laugh. We're going to be talking comics, and even before the show, we just want to hang out with all you lovely people. We got some goodies, and also there's a raffle, Tony.
Yeah, good old Richard Chief. Yeah, gotta love Rich. He's done, he's really working hard on this, and thanks to everyone for the donation. So we're gonna figure out how we're probably gonna do it, but it's likely to be, if you turn up on the day, buy a raffle ticket, there's some like original art, graphic novels, people's comics, all sorts of things coming in.
Yeah.
But we're also going to offer them up for sale probably next week or the week after online. So you'll be able to buy a raffle ticket, and we will post the result to you. We'll post the prize to you, and we'll give the results out. We're probably going to do it maybe as a bit of an extra on the podcast, or stream it on the Facebook page or something like that, where we'll announce who's won each ticket. And then if you're not there, it'll be sent out to you. If you are there, you can collect it, sort of thing. But you should see the stuff. Go to the Facebook page. Go and see the stuff that we're getting in. It's absolutely awesome. People have been hugely generous. And the proceeds of that raffle will be going to Little Heroes. So it's a worthy cause. So all the details about the raffle tickets will be released soon.
Yes.
There you go.
And thank you so much to everyone for donating to this raffle.
Yeah.
We're hoping to raise money for a good cause, as well as just having a good laugh in the name of comics, which is what this show is all about.
I think Rich has sorted a PayPal out, so I know he's got an email and all that sort of thing. So that's nice. it'll be very easy for people who are in other countries or can't make it on the day to buy something.
So over the next couple of weeks, stay tuned to our Twitter and our Facebook and the Facebook group and stuff like that, which we'll give you details at the end of the show where to find those. But we hope to see you there. I've actually got 20 badges made up for the people that can't that make it to the show.
Some people
are talking about it. I'm not sure if that's enough. I'm a bit worried.
God, I hope 20 people come.
I'd be happy if two people turned up. So it's gonna be a good day. So we're looking forward to it. So that's May the 4th. May the 18th is Lawless Convention in Bristol. I'm going to be there.
Yeah, I'm not at that one.
I'm repping the Awesome Pod there. So if you're at that convention, seek me out. And if you haven't got Awesome Comics yet, then you can get them there. And there'll be sketches, and there'll be all kinds of goodies at the table. So put that one on your list as well.
That same weekend, I'll be at the NCS Festival in Huntington Beach in California. So if you're from that side of the pond, make sure you message me, and I'd love to meet any listeners who are there. Not that I think we have that many who live in LA, but there you go. There might be a couple. So that'd be good.
Yeah.
And Dave Brown's releasing the new issue of Shaman Kane at Lawless as well. So go and get a copy of that.
Love Shaman Kane. Love Shaman Kane.
Very good.
Yeah. So awesome. So there you go. There's plenty more convention talk to it. We're not going to talk about MCM yet. That'll be closer to the time I think we'll start ramping up for that and what we're going to be doing there. And if there's any other conventions up and down the UK, abroad, wherever you are in the world, if there's like an indie show that you think more people need to know about, get in touch with us, whether it be on social media or in the email. Let us know, and we'll give a shout out. It's not just UK we're talking about. We're talking, it could be Australia, it could be anything. If there's any little show, let us know, because you never know who listens to this show. I'm always surprised.
Oh, and I haven't told you, have I? I've put our hat in the ring for Edinburgh next year, so. I've applied. Yeah, I know not all three of us are going to be there. To be fair, it's a long way, but I'm likely to be there. So,
Are we going to take your private jet?
Yeah, I'll probably fly up there in the helicopter. James McCullough message who said it's open if you fancy. I thought I had such a good time this year. I'm going
to one I really would like to go to. So, you know, fingers crossed, I can make it next year.
Yeah, cool, nice one.
Yes, but from so much awesomeness to some recommendations. Just me and Tony.
We both got two, haven't we?
We both got two short, sharp, sexy comic recommendations for you. Should we take one each? Do you want to go first, Tony?
Okay, man. First one is a preview that I'm going to give everyone coming out in a few short weeks. Is Skip from Molly Mendoza. It's an eyebrow book. 165 pages, full colour, hardback, £16.99. Don't know how they do it. The story is, when Bloom is suddenly flung into another world and meets the exiled and optimistic Gloopy, the two youngsters find themselves in a much-needed kindred spirit. But as they skip through dimensions and encounter weeping giants, alligator islands, and topsy-turvy 2D worlds, they find that their greatest challenge will be facing their own fears back home. This is, I hate the phrase adult fairy tale. It kind of is. It's, but what it is probably one of the best pieces of art I've seen in a graphic novel for a long time. Molly, who is completely and utterly new to me, is a complete fucking revelation. She uses she cascades images off the page, round the page. She makes grids, swirling designs. But dependent on which environment, they skip through environments. It's a bit like, imagine a good version of Sliders. It's a bit like that. And this this human boy who's from a post-apocalyptic world and this strange sort of hairy creature in a baseball cap travel through these dimensions, and they discover creatures and scary environments, and they get trapped and they escape and they chase things and they're chased. And it's just probably go to neveruninanything.blogspot.co.uk and see it. The visuals will absolutely blow your mind. Just incredible stuff. You can follow Molly on Instagram. She's MS Molly M, MSMOLLYM, or if you go to Molly Mendoza, MENDOZA.com, MollyMendoza.com, you'll see an example of it. It's just exceptional, just genuinely exceptional, and a very moving story. So that's my first one. There you go, man.
Nice. My first one is a series that I discovered this week. It's got two issues already. It's from Space Between Entertainment, who I haven't heard of before.
No.
And this is Prison Witch, number 1 and 2, okay. Which I saw...
Is it a bit like Prison Pocket?
No, it's something a bit different, actually. we're not getting into that, Tony Esmond. This is written by Amy Shand and Pat Shand, art by Erica D'Urso. The cover is by Jen Sun-Ong, and lettered by Jim Campbell. Jim Campbell, okay. Everywhere.
He letters everything.
Yeah. This was a complete surprise and a revelation to me, this series. It's about basically a girl called Cameron Rivers who she actually thinks she's possessed by a demon, and it's a prison comic. It starts in, okay, you know, beginning, middle and end. It's all set within a female prison. Think Orange is the New Black, but mixed with, well, it's just got supernatural elements and stuff, but I want to say Orange is the New Black, but there's definitely more of a darker side to it.
Is it sort of an adult one?
It's definitely adult. There's some cursing, there's some rough stuff going on. It is cursing and rough stuff. That's what we need more in our life. But no, this was from the cover of issue one, I wasn't quite sure. I thought I'd take a shot on it, purely because, like, on Comixology you can see like previews of interior pages. And that's what sold me, because the cover was a little bit, is this a little bit sort of a teeny witch kind of comic? I'm not sure if it'll be for me.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But the story inside is fucking awesome. And it's a black character story. Yeah, black and white.
Oh, I'm looking at some of the pages now.
This is next level team. You know, these are people that you've discovered, if you know what I mean, when you look at this, because the art is amazing.
And this is kickstarted from the looks of it as well, was it?
Was it? I've gone into it not knowing anything about it, so it wouldn't surprise me, because it does say on Comixology a brand new graphic novel about sort of romance and danger and like spells and stuff and witches that are not to be messed with. But it's not a graphic novel, this is told in issues, so maybe they've broken it down into individual issues for the sort of bigger market.
Oh, they did well, man. They got $16,000.
Oh, lovely. They told an entire graphic novel. I like that though. I like that if you've got an entire graphic novel and then you break it down into individual issues.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it's they're New York based from the looks of it.
Yeah,
yeah, 485 backers. That's good, isn't it? It's not bad.
Nice. Yes. Yeah. Apparently, they're the team that did Destiny New York, which I swear I've heard of that name somewhere. But yeah, this is definitely one that it's got supernatural elements. It's got some real great character moments and like every great sort of like those TV shows, whether it be like Oz or Sons of Anarchy or, you know, Sopranos or things like that, I'm not quite sure. Is anyone safe? You know, that kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah. It could like happen. Like Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Yeah. What's that? Yeah. No, I'm only joking.
Never heard of it.
yeah, so Prison Witch, issue 1 and issue 2 are out now on Comixology. I don't know if they're in print, but seek it out. I think you'll enjoy it, folks. So that's my first.
Cool. Okay, mate. My second is Murmur, issue 2, which I picked up at Edinburgh by Stephen Ingrams. Now, I was chatting to Stuart McCune, and he said, oh, go and see Stephen if you're at Edinburgh, because he's a great creator. I think they were next to each other at Thought Bubble one year. And this is part of the reason that I say that Edinburgh is a community. The Scottish comic creator crowd is more of a sort of a cohesive community as opposed to sort of this tribal thing, which I spoke about briefly last week in my ramble about Edinburgh. Because this is, if this was in England, people would be saying, oh, this would be suitable for LCAF. Yeah. You know, don't go to MCM. This is more of an LCAF type thing. And it's nice, it's just a nice story. And I think that's how we got to see it, start seeing it these days. Stephen's very sort of thoughtful, sort of, I'm going to say, introspective kind of creator. The story's as far as I know, it's an autobiography, but it's biographical, but it's got a sort of personal edge to it. It's an A5, full color. The first is two sort of stories, personal stories. The first one is about a couple of kids. They're coming home from football, talking about football, and they meet a girl who's found a dead rabbit. So they decide what they're going to do with it, and they decide to sort of give it like almost like a Game of Thrones sort of funeral, where they set it on fire and put it down the river. And it sort of spins off a bit like that, but it's got a bit of a supernatural element to it, in a sort of strange but like personal and very slight but striking way, which I won't ruin. The second part is Solus. Oscar, who's this geezer in it, is at a busy house party, and he's pretty uncomfortable. And he just does what every teenager does. He goes outside and he kind of fucks up an interaction with a girl, and he kind of goes back in to make amends, and it doesn't quite work. And it's just very true, you know, I suppose is the best way of saying it. It's like Love and Rockets true. It's that sort of feel to it, you know, like an English sort of feeling of, you know, those personal relationships and the way that being slightly proud and slightly angry and slightly teenage works into how you reply and react to things that happen in your life. I'll definitely be following up this. Spoke to Stephen at the convention, nice guy, and I've spoke to him on social media since. If you go to blurredlinescomics.co.uk, or if you go to @blcomics on Twitter, Instagram, he's Friend Unit. Do you follow him on Instagram? I followed him and didn't realise that. it was the same guy, and think it's a Friend Unit. And there's a good example of this sort of colourful, personal, everyday sort of slice of life stuff going on. And you can see that on the Instagram. Yeah, really good. Yeah. Stephen, really impressed as a creator who's been about for a while and I haven't really discovered before. But yeah, I'll definitely be pursuing his stuff again. I think awesome. That's my second one.
Brilliant. Yeah. And my last one is second time I'm mentioning this series. It's from Image Books, written by John Layman, art by Afu Chan, and by far it's my favourite comic series of the year.
Okay.
And that is Outer Darkness.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is basically Star Trek mixed with The Evil Dead, or whatever. It's literally, there's supernatural elements in space, and a crew that are just a bunch of horrible bastards and monsters and demons in space, and it is amazing, absolutely amazing. This is the one that goes top of the pile every week that it comes out. Issue 6 came out last week. Issue 5 and issue 6 had a sort of joining cover, if you know what I mean. In the old days, remember X-Men number 1, you had all those different covers that all joined up.
Yeah, God.
even though I love the artwork on that, but anyway. But Outer Darkness 5 and 6 match up. Issue 6 is the last issue of this arc, so I'm rubbing my hands with glee. Watch yourself, Tony. Watch yourself. Don't make that dirty. because normally with Image, that means their trade paperback is on its way.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And I will snap that up for the shelves because it is... It definitely leaves it like there's going to be more. There's a wonderful graphic at the end of every issue where it shows like the crew, and let's just face it, there's some of them, but by issue 6, it just has deceased written across their face. And if someone dies in this series, they don't die pleasantly. Yeah, issue 6, exorcists, mathematicians and soldiers mount up to battle one hell of a demon. With the number of dead crewmen mounting, Captain Rigg does what he can to save the rest, even if it means they had better be ready to die too. I think you would absolutely love Captain Rigg, Tony.
Oh, will I? Okay, yeah, I must
he,
look at this.
He is, yeah, yeah. He is the latest in a long line of absolutely fantastic comic bastards. He is, yeah, he's just brilliant. Just yeah, I'm looking forward to more of this series. And I don't know whether it will get issue 7. You know, sometimes Image books, they take a little bit of a break, don't they?
Yeah, between, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah,
like a mini-series thing going on, there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I hope this one keeps going, because I just look forward to buying it. So there you go, Outer Darkness. I knew it must have been pretty good, because Andy Clift, who is like one of the biggest Star Trek fans that I know, when I said that about this book, he got it and then said it was great. So I thought, yes, sometimes I do know what I'm talking about. Not often, though, as our lovely listeners can attest to. But this has been a fantastic show, full of
full
of great indie books to check out.
We've been researching like mad for today's show as well, haven't we?
And it's been an That's absolute joy catching up on stuff. That
I really love it. I love that. You know, it's never work.
Yeah.
When we get a new guest and you say, oh, we got, I don't know, fucking Jim Starlin coming on. Yeah. I think, right, good, I can read 400 Jim Starlin comics. You know, it's like that, you know.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we've got a couple more shows before episode 200. So there's going to be more guests until we decide that we're all guests. This has been the longest run of guests in our history.
Might be, yeah.
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 So, we're just doing it all the way to episode 200 where the band breaks up.
Eltingville style.
Yeah. It'll be chaos. But we hope you enjoyed this episode, folks. And I'm sure that a lot of people will have got a kick out of it. If you want to get in touch with us about anything or shows, comics that we need to check out, we have got some emails coming recently about some extra comics. Our review, well, I say review pile, we're not really reviewers, but thank you to anyone that sends us stuff. We've got some stuff to check out over the next sort of month or so expect.
Yeah, if you've got a new comic, then please do send it in. If we don't necessarily review it on the show, I'll certainly take a gander at it for the website and stuff, you know. So, yeah, please do. I think since I've started giving honest reviews, the review copies have slowed down a bit.
honest, not honest or reviews, spicy.
I've avoided criticism and avoided.
You do not suffer fools gladly, but you will gladly let the fools suffer.
That's exactly. Very true. Yeah.
Put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah, I'll get a fucking fire iron to you.
Yeah. But let us know what you think of this show in several different ways. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at The Awesome Pod. Well, we put a poll up recently and Tom Curry gave it a shout out. Yes.
There you go. Love Tom. Yeah, I'm doing something with Tom at the moment. He sent me through some of the initial pencils and they look amazing.
Tom is the man. He's a legend. Yeah. And we'll probably just have to get him as a guest on the show once just so we can talk to him. But yes, you never know what's going to happen on the Twitter, but we will be announcing our guests every week. So stay tuned to that. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you do Facebook, then really the only thing you really need to do on Facebook, never mind everyone's photo gallery or whatever this person's, trying on a new shirt. No one gives a shit, Steve.
No.
But what
Steve's a wanker.
Yeah, yeah. To any Steves that we actually know, that we're not talking about you. Theoretical Steve. And he's not part of the awesome group, Awesome Comics Talk, on Facebook, which is fantastic. And there's loads of great chat going on there at the moment, including a latest, as well as the stuff about the raffle. I did something. I just opened the floodgates this week.
We've had a few in while we've been recording around that one.
Yeah. I came up with a silly idea. It's basically an art thread on the Awesome Comics Talk group. I said, what if there was a shared universe for lots of crazy characters, be they serious, be they silly, be they whatever. It's just an excuse to be a bit creative. So if you've got a little character that, you know, save all your gold for the stuff that will make you money, but if you just want to draw out a funny little sketch, post it on this and we'll create.
There's some great ones on there. Some really good ones.
The awesome verse is growing and I'd like to see it grow even more. So check that
out.
If
you're going to apply to join the Facebook group, we want you to apply. We want the community to grow.
Yeah.
But don't just write, are you a listener? No. and then think that's going to get you through.
Yeah.
It's not like an automated system.
No. We watch it and yeah. We won't accept you if you're not going to play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the amount of people we get, they say, oh, yeah, I'm a listener, and then I let them through, and then they immediately post their Kickstarter.
Yeah, yeah. And we have to approve them, so
yeah.
If it's not the group for you. Mind you, if they don't listen to the show, they're not going to hear this, Tony, so...
That's true.
This is pointless.
Yeah, it's true.
Everything we do is pointless.
Like the rest of my life.
But we appreciate all of you checking us out, whether it is on the website,
awesomecomics.podbean.com.
Don't say it like that, Tony.
Sorry.
You're making it sexual.
I like everything sexual.
It's true. God knows what episode 200 is going to be like. Yeah, thank you. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave a review and subscribe and get the word out.
Because
the more people listen to the show, the more people discover indie books and the latest titles you need to be checking out. And amazing creators like Evan, who, you know, just...
Oh, yeah. Go buy his books.
Go buy his books.
Go and download something, anything. You'll get a cheap book on,
yeah.
you know, in a quarter bin, or you'll get one on Comixology. Go and read some Milk and Cheese, and it will improve your day. And if you're on a bad day, go and read Milk and Cheese.
Exactly. And it's another example of don't be afraid to contact the creator and just say, I love this book.
Yeah.
Because you'd be surprised. Yeah. So
he's brilliant.
He was brilliant, and he's going to be coming back soon. So, so what other networks are we on? We're on Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. Any others, Tony?
We're on the conspiracy theory one, Pod Julius Assange's cat knows it all.
I know that he's reading from something in his room, and just think, if you add up all the things that he said in every single one of these links, that room is terrifying, isn't it?
It was going to be a quote from Evan, but then I realised that he said this before he came on the air, and I was going to say pod fucking hole, but I realised that no one will know what that means because he said it while we were chatting before. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was pretty hilarious.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I'll be able to pick out an outtake from that.
Yeah, I know.
There might be some good ones. And yes. Where can people find us on social media, etc.? Tony.
Yeah, S-O-S-E-Z-O-H-Y-Z on Twitter. If you go to neverunendthing.blogspot.co.uk, there's a load going up this week. I've got a bit of a sort of travelling around the UK, as is my want these days, staying in hotels. So if you've got something that needs reviewing, it's a good time to send it through, and it'll get a little pimp. I've put a few Kickstarters up recently that I think have been sort of worthy candidates, so get on it.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. You can find Dan Butcher at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com. And you should, because it's awesome. He's got like a Running Man sort of issue that is blowing my bloody mind.
Yeah.
I'm being nice because he's not here. So there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Jester Diablo. You can find out more about my comic at theredmousefrommars.com. And as always, folks, thank you very much for listening. Go forth.
Oh, can I say one quickly? Late Night, Sense of Steel, issue 2. Go on a Kickstarter for that. I've completely forgot. I've been meaning to say that all week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Late
find
night,
find it in the show notes. There's going to be going to be a few show notes this week. So,
yeah.
Go to the Podbean page and click on the links. And you will find gold everywhere.
Yeah.
So, until next week, until next week's show, thank you very much for listening. Thank you to Evan once more. And from Dan, Tony, and myself, have a brilliant week. You know what's coming, Tony. And as always, what do they do?
Stay fucking awesome.
I'm so happy.
you messaged me to say you were proud of me today, and that made my day.
Oh dear. I've never been prouder than I am right now.
See ya.
See ya, folks.